Welcome to the program. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in my ongoing series, The Week in Reviews. This week, we're going to talk with renowned stained glass artist Mark Levy. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hi, Simon. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I love stained glass. I have to tell you that right off the bat. So what I would like to do for the benefit of our listeners is for you to tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Mark Levy?
Southern California native, born and raised in the Los Angeles area. My background is in both art and architecture, on design, historical, and for inspiration. I have been working with glass since about 1976 or 77, and have had the benefit of having several studios around the Los Angeles area to give me an even better appreciation of being able to grow up in such a great locale.
Okay. Stained glass is an awesome media, or medium, rather. Where did you get the interest in that speciality as opposed to, you know, some other discipline?
Back when education was fully funded in the 70s in Los Angeles, my high school offered an introductory course in stained glass as part of its elective program. And having done and taken most of the other classes in school, it struck me as kind of an interesting subject because I didn't know that much about it either. So it was in 1972 that I afforded myself of that class. Was taught by a gentleman who also taught woodshop at our school, Ben Halpern, and he was very inspirational in taking his students and giving them an introduction into this craft, which goes back thousands of years. But he was a very good instructor and enabled people who never had any experience with it to actually create projects.
Well, I'm totally amazed. You know, I look at the schooling system today, and all I hear is the evil STEM and, you know, test results. You know, things have changed. I seriously doubt that many high schools are, teaching classes about you know, stained glass and how beautiful it is. do you have?
Yeah, any... I was very fortunate that I was in public school at a time where there was a lot of funding for things that we don't see anymore, like physical education or the arts and stuff like that.
Wow. Now, you and I have talked on several occasions, many occasions, and I can honestly say you know more about stained glass than anyone I have ever met. I'm just the man in the street, shall we say, and I know little about art, and I'll use that awfully awful term, but I know what I like. Yeah, and
that's where most people come from with the arts. They know what they like,
right? And I do love stained glass. Is there a favorite artist that you admire, or a style that you admire?
As far as just the art, any of the modern artists, Motherwell, Beaconborn, Anthony Caro, Frankenthaler, any of those modern period of artists I like, I think that my influences in my work are almost equally based on architecture as much as they are on art. I'm a frustrated architect, having taken schooling in architecture but just never getting around to taking my board, so I would say that my interest in architecture and art is what's predominant in my work. As a stained glass artist, there's a gentleman by the name of Narcissus Quagliata, who I took a study course with in 1980, who is internationally known today for his craft, and I would say he's probably my contemporary inspiration in stained glass.
It's interesting that you talk about architecture. Recently, I reconnected with a very, very old friend of mine. We hadn't talked in almost 35 years. And he trained as an architect and got all of his papers. And I recall the day when he told me, I'm not designing little boxes on a hill. You know, I am going to change my career and become a truck driver. And he did that for a while, but subsequently he's become a playwright and various other other reincarnations. But you see a distinct connection between architecture and stained glass?
Well, stained glass is an art form. Stained glass is just it's a art form of taking small pieces of glass and affixing them together in a lead or a copper foil matrix. So the art form itself is what stained glass is. The art that it can be interpreted in, whether it's modern or traditional or Eastern or Western, is unlimited. So you can have very, very traditional stained glass, and you can have very, very modern stained glass. So the architectural implications for it are just using the medium of small pieces of glass and lead and copper foil, but doing designs and projects that are very architecturally based, meaning that it's interpreting what the architect was trying to design. It's bringing light into a space in a particular way that the architect may want it to flood through his building. So architecture is just one interpretation of how stylistically stained glass can be done, as it can be done in contemporary or modern or traditional in that regard.
Silly layman's question here. You know, you mentioned lead. It sounds like a fairly dangerous process, you know, fusing bits of glass together. Is it technically a very difficult process?
Technically, once you learn it, no, it's not difficult. Like anything, like any materials that you work with, you need to respect the materials that you're working with and take precautions, whether you're a chemist and you're working with chemicals or you're a photographer and you're working with chemicals. It's just respecting the materials and taking precautions with them. And other than that, it has been around for the length of time that it has, because it is an art form that, while you need to take precautions in working with it for safety, is one that still breeds projects of all sorts all over the world.
All right, I'm going to spring a question on you, because it directly relates to something I'm going to be asking you about a little later on in this interview. Life is a series of ups and downs. Tell us about the Northridge earthquake and how it affected you.
Yeah, we live in Southern California here, so we are very, very prone to earthquakes. The earthquake that hit Los Angeles in 1994, I had the benefit of being in a studio for about 10 years in North Hollywood, California, and I had outgrown the space. So in December of 93, I went looking for a new studio, and I went looking all over Los Angeles trying to find a good space, and I actually found one in Chatsworth, California. And it had everything that I was looking for. It benefited me from location, and it benefited me from the space, the working environment. So I remodeled it and put in a gallery, a studio, a workspace, and had everything ready by probably the end of beginning January 1994. Unfortunately, after looking all around Los Angeles, I actually had selected a place for a new studio that was 2 miles from the epicenter of the Northridge earthquake. So about a month later, when the earthquake hit, my studio was basically destroyed. And life happens that way. We all have the unexpected events that we have no control over. So it altered the course of my work in many ways and gave me a healthy respect for Mother Nature and her effects on the planet.
As I understand it, you were scheduled to put on a display at a very, very well-respected art show. Tell us a little bit about how you dealt with the fact that your works had been destroyed by the earthquake.
I believe it was in May of that year I was scheduled to do a very highly regarded art show, and in the gallery and the studio I had probably half a dozen or a dozen pieces ready to do for the show that were in the gallery. And unfortunately, they were all destroyed. And when I got the courage, which took me about 2 or 3 days to get out to the studio because I knew how close it was to the epicenter, and the freeways were down, and I knew when I walked in it wouldn't be a pleasant sight. When I walked into the space, I walked into the gallery, and it just everything was destroyed, and I felt like I walked into a glass graveyard. And I knew that I had this show to do, and it was a really important show for me to do. So feeling that, what I did was is that I took, you know, it's a corny, somewhat cliched statement, but I took the lemons that life gave and made lemonade, and I changed the focus of the art show. I took each of the broken pieces and created plexiglass coffins for them. They were different sizes and different shapes based on the remnants that were left of the piece. I had little headstones made and put them in front. And then at the show, I set up a display on pedestals with pieces of grass underneath these plexiglass coffins that contained the remnants of the work with the headstones, and put flowers in front of each one so that it looked like a cemetery for glass. And as it turns out, which has never happened before, I not only won first place for the art, but I won first place for display of the booth by creating this glass graveyard. And actually, all the pieces sold, and I had to hang on to one because I wanted to keep one myself. So I don't know if I would have won first place had that not happened. I have no way of knowing that. I think that when events happen, you don't know where they're going to lead or where they're going to take. You just do the best you can when they happen.
Right. But that was hardly the first award, well, it might have been the first award, first big award that you won, but I understand that recently you got another award, a place called Howes. Tell us a little about that.
Howes.com is a website. It falls under, I suspect, what the social media category would be, and it's like Facebook, only it's for home design, construction, architecture, interiors. They have, I believe it's 20, 22 million readers, and it is a, there are architects, interior designers, artisans, suppliers, and it's social media in the sense that there's chat rooms and there's listings, and you can have comments posted, and it's an interaction for everybody in the design community, professional to professional and professional to homeowner.
and it is the place right now for interior designers and architects to be, since print media is kind of going the way of the dinosaur. Since print media is going that direction, what Houzz has become is just the place for the design industry and the architecture industry to be able to interact with homeowners all over the world.
Yeah, and they gave you an award.
They did. It was they behind the scenes. What they do is corporate board selects a certain number of what they're called Houzzers, members of Houzz, professional members of Houzz, and they select a small group, and I was given the Customer Service Award for 2014. So that was a really unplanned and very, very gracious thing for them to do, and I really, really took a great deal of appreciation for everybody in awarding me that. So it was completely unexpected, and it's a nice validation that the work that I'm putting out there is connecting with people, both professional and homeowners.
Okay, just for listeners, Houzz is HOUZZ.com. Yeah. So well worth checking up, and your particular part of Houzz is Houzz.com / Mark Levy Studio. Am I correct in that?
Yes, it is indeed. And everything okay. Listed there based on it's the actual listing is www.houzz.com/pro/Mark Levy Studio/_public. And
okay.
Everybody has a different listing there as they would if they were on Facebook. So it's essentially Facebook for the design and architecture industry.
Right. And I understand you also have a website. Would you care to tell us where people can find you there?
Sure, that's Mark Levy Studio as well. And over the years, just to cover my bases, I've got .com, .net, and .biz. So either of those three addresses, people can find Mark Levy Studio, .com, .net, and .biz.
All right. And incidentally, listeners, it is an interesting site. You can see many of the works that Mark has done, both in the area of public art, which we're about to talk to, and also examples of where you can, you know, see stained glass in private homes. In fact, a mutual friend of ours, Manny Barling, which is how I first heard your name, has a couple of pieces in his home, and he is just delighted with them. So there you go, Mark.
Yeah,
pat on the back.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, Manny and I met about 10 or 12 years ago, and I had the benefit of working with him for several areas in his house, and he's a very colorful guy, and we put in some really colorful pieces in his home, and it is nice to know that he's pleased with everything that we did there.
And actually, one conversation I had with him was all about how wonderful it is to walk into the room and depending on the time of day and the position of the sun and the weather, the stained glass window always reflects beautiful light. I'm sure that's something you've heard from other clients.
Well, the interesting thing about stained glass as a medium is that it is equal parts stained glass and Mother Nature. Without light, stained glass is really a celebration of light. So without light from Mother Nature, stained glass really does not come to life. It's unusual in the sense that most art is in and of itself the focal point, but glass, stained glass, fused glass, laminated glass, cast glass, any of the glass arts really, really are a tool to enhance and personify Mother Nature and what light can do.
But light isn't static. That I think that's the real point. You know,
yeah, it does. I mean, it's a moving thing. It's an organic form, and light is different depending on what time of year, what time of day, where you are on the planet. It is. It's an ever-changing spectrum, and that's why what stained glass does is celebrates it, because a window can have 15 different looks or 25 different looks depending on what the light is like during the day. If there's clouds moving, if it's bright, if it's overcast, it has a completely... It looks different all the time, all year long, depending on what kind of light is hitting it, both during the daylight hours and the setting sun. So it really is interactive with Mother Nature.
Okay, let's change the subject slightly. Earlier on, I mentioned public art. Let's start at the very beginning with a thumbnail sketch. To people like you that are well-versed in the subject, you'll probably think this is stupid. But what is public art, and where can it be found?
Public art is just that. It's art for the public. It's a federally mandated program that supports the arts across the spectrum and anything that can be considered the arts. It mandates that a certain percentage of construction costs for public buildings, hospitals, libraries, utilitarian police stations, museums, anything that's in the public realm, it mandates that a percentage of the construction costs for that particular complex or building needs to be given to artists. And the artists then take that budget and they create site-specific work in their medium for this public art, so that it becomes part of the building and the public is completely able to see this free of charge, and it is an integral part of what the completed building or location is.
You mentioned percentage. What sort of percentage are we talking about?
It varies. Every state, and it depends on what country you're in, of course, but in the United States, generally speaking, it's 1 to 2% of construction costs for a project, and it's set aside so that when an artist is either expressed interest or contacts regarding a public art project, they know exactly the budget that they will have for the project. It's already predetermined, so there's no pricing that really goes on. You just you agree to do the work for the budget that's allowed by the public art.
Okay, and I want to focus in on one particular project, and this goes back to the infamous Northridge earthquake that you lost a great deal of work. Also damaged was Fire Station 78, so damaged it had to be rebuilt. And the building looks splendid, although, the artist's rendering... or the architect's rendering, rather, really didn't show it at its best. And that there was a need for some public art in this utilitarian building. I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah, it was Fire Station 70 is located in Studio City, California. And as you said, the station was also, as a lot of Southern California buildings were, devastated by the earthquake. And it mandated that a new fire station be constructed. And they went about acquiring land for the construction of the fire station. And it ended up being on a parcel that was part of an old golf course that was located in Studio City. There were some tennis courts that had been built over the years, so they took some of the tennis courts out. And fire station was designed for that spot. And then once the fire station had been designed, it fell into the auspices of the L.A. Department of Cultural Affairs, which is the entity in Los Angeles that handles public art. And there's different entities all over the United States, obviously, that handle the public art process. And then Cultural Affairs went about their set of protocols that they did to announce the project for public art and for inquiry from artists.
Okay. Now, you're an artist, but, you know, so are many other people. Tell us a little bit about, the process.
With public art, whatever the agency is that handles public art, artists through the community or networking know about the entity and contact them and let them know that they would like to be notified of public art projects. So the Department of Cultural Affairs has a repository of names of artists that it keeps on file, and when public art projects are announced, the Department of Cultural Affairs will publicize them, and sometimes specifically according to a certain zip code or council district, artists in that area will be contacted, and or it could be citywide, or it could be statewide, or it could even be a national call. And what they are asking for is a RFQ, which is a request for qualifications. So based on the names that they have, artists can apply under an RFQ for that project. The RFQ is a generalized approach to the project that an artist wants to take. They are looking for both emerging artists as well as successful artists who are making a living with their work. And they ask, of course, to see previous works, to find out if you've worked in budgets that are similar to the ones that are being considered for that project, and a very short narrative from an artist on how they see their particular work attributing the qualities that the city is looking for the public entity and the neighborhood. And that's what public art is, really. It's about the neighborhood, so that each project is supposed to represent the area that it sits in. One part of Los Angeles might have a certain demographic and business core, and another part may have another. And what the city is looking for is someone who understands that not only are they going to be working in their medium and their aesthetic, but their influences are going to be strongly influenced by the public in that particular area.
That fascinates me. That's something I had never considered. You want to make the art special to the neighborhood, the area.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
How on earth do you go about doing that?
Well, in Studio City is basically the home of television and film production, and has been for Los Angeles for a good, going back as far back as when L.A. was first settled. There were ranches out here that they used to film all the old black and white westerns on. So in Studio City, I knew going in that what the project needed to reflect was that it's the home of the film and television industry. So in the realm of public art, the best thing for an artist to do is to get a feeling for where the art is going to be located. So I did canvassing. I spoke to people on the street. I went to restaurants and chatted with people. I talked to small business owners. I contacted local newspapers. I contacted the studios to find out if I could look at their archives to see what the area was like when it was first being settled. It's a lot of research on the artist's part to get a sense for the community. And the Department of Cultural Affairs expects not only for the artist to create a great work in their medium, but that it be strongly influenced by whatever the particular neighborhood or location is for the art.
I can't imagine how much work that is. I mean, you haven't even put, you know, pen to paper to design anything. Is this a long process?
Yeah, I've been involved on several public art projects, and it is as long as the process as the artist wants to make it. Some artists don't believe in doing that. They believe in just, maybe looking online and gathering some information and letting that influence their proposal. But in my case, I spent weeks canvassing all over Studio City and talking to people and talking to firemen in this particular situation because it was for fire stations. And I would, whenever I had the opportunity, I would talk to the firemen and I would ask them how do they work and how do they live in the space. So each artist's approach to it can be very short or very protracted. It really depends on how much energy they're willing to put into trying to secure the commission.
I love what you did with Fire Station 78. Would you care to explain? I know it's hard to do on radio. It's easy to see in pictures, and I will certainly put some photos up.
Sure. The architect basically, in the process after the RFQ, there's the RFP. So from the either hundreds or thousands of applications that may come in, then what they do is they request an RFP, which is a request for a proposal. So this is very, very specific now. They want to know what you're proposing. They want to see designs. They want to understand exactly what you're doing. Part of this is engaging with the architect. In Studio City, they had designed two locations on the front of the fire station. There was a large tower that's the stair tower that had a large window, and then there was a window directly next to it on the other side, and that was the architect's original vision and was a suggested place for art, not necessarily stained glass, but any kind of art. My suggestion was that there was another wall that faced north. It was completely masonry. And the staircase went up there, and it was just a perfect place to have a series of additional windows that followed the architectural line, again, bringing the architecture into the project, that followed the architectural lines of the staircase. So I made a contrary presentation proposal to the architects to modify that wall and put in an additional three windows. And the proposal obviously was accepted. I was awarded the commission. In the design of the project, as I had put in the narrative that they wanted, it was the home of film and television, Studio City. So what I did was I let film sort of be my guiding force in my design and try to interpret it both architecturally and decoratively for the building. So what the mural is a stylized version of film moving through a projector, which is going back again to the dinosaur days. It's not around that often anymore, when film used to move through a series of sprockets and gears as it moved through a projector. And what I did was I stylized that particular element in glass, as well as creating a background that addressed what the architect was trying to do with his space, taking into consideration how he wanted the spaces to flow. And the combination of those two informed my work. And in the stair tower, which was the main window, what I decided to do was I wanted to do something that had not been done before. So what we did was we created a clock in laminated infused glass, and the clock is solar powered and it's completely functional and it sits atop the window. So bringing all these elements into play, I think what they really do is they give the fire station what the architects and city were looking for, which is great public art, but they also give the firefighters something that they can enjoy all the time and that they can appreciate when they're not running out saving lives. So it also gives the people in the neighborhood something to see when they go by because they've lit it very well. So it addresses the three important factors that exist in public art, namely the public, namely the building, and then the city entity that's going to occupy the space.
I have to admit that I love the clock. Was that your idea or someone else?
It was my idea, and it ate into the budget, you know, because the budget is fixed, and it was a really expensive addition. But I wanted to do something. All fire stations have to have clocks. I don't know what the particular reasoning is, but it's something that they require. And rather than having something utilitarian someplace else in the building, my conversations with the architect engaged him into letting me do this. So it had not been done before. It was a really complicated addition. It involved fusing glass and laminating it and special types of glass called dichroic glass, which is something that NASA developed for the space program as a means to protect the ultraviolet from coming into the space capsules as they re-enter the atmosphere. So it's a really tricky material to work with. And then we had to fabricate creating this clock into the leaded stained glass windows behind it and then have it all work. So it was a challenge that I didn't need to take on, but it was something that I really wanted the piece to have.
Oh, I think it's just a wonderful addition to the work. Now,
thank you.
You're very welcome. Now, I believe this all happened several years ago. So, you know, you're not involved in the planning process anymore, but. What sort of reaction did you get from the public and indeed the fire station people, when they saw the finished product?
Public art from start to finish can be a multi-year process. I worked on the fire station for probably 4 or 5 years. Once it was done, the response from the community, the response was just wonderful from all parties, from the firemen's union and the city and the architect and the councilman and the local district. Captain Carson, who is captain of the station, who I work with very closely on the project, was really, really, really enamored with peace, obviously because they get to enjoy it all the time. And he was so taken with it that what he asked me to do outside of the realm of public art was he explained that fire stations have tours all the time. It could be school children, it can be political, it can be fundraising, and he wanted everybody who encountered the work to know about it. So he asked me outside of the scope of public art to create an art piece on the wall at the bottom of the staircase, which is the inside of the mural, telling the story about the fire station and how it was destroyed in the earthquake and the public art and the stained glass, so that when they do have tours and they do have people in, either he or other firefighters will be able to reference this so everybody can have a really engaged moment with the work and understand why and how it's there. So all around, I was really fortunate to get a lot of congratulatory comments from those involved.
You know, you said it you know, the project was 4 or 5 years. Would you do it again?
Yes, and I have. I mean, I've done other public projects for the city as well. So it just depends. You know, artists like public art, obviously, because it has a high notoriety value, but it also refines the artist's process so that you're by trying to do this, what you have to do is you have to exceed yourself. You have to continually not only have your art evolve, but be able to interpret it for different purposes and different locations and for different city functions. So the fire station, I've done several libraries, and it really is, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hierarchy and dealing with all sorts of city entities, from engineers to attorneys and inspectors, but it is also a great way to be able to, in the most basic of terms, as I said, I'm a Los Angeles native, and it was a great place to grow up, and it's a great place to still live. So at the root of it all, there's still something about being able to give back to the city and be able to put something out there in a way of saying thank you for having the opportunities I've been afforded, for the successful business that I have, and for being able to grow up and live in a great place.
I love your attitude. You know, most people are just out for themselves. You know, I'll do this if you give me this. But it sounds more like you're saying public art, you know, you will do it at a fixed budget and let people enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm a big believer. I mean, I think the current term for it is pay it forward, but I'm a big believer in that you put back to that which you've been able to benefit from in all realms throughout however people live and interact, is that I believe that you put back to that which you've been able to benefit from. So it's a mutually beneficial project, public art. I think for me personally, as I just said, I benefit and the city benefits. So I think it's a win-win situation for everybody. But I do really believe in that notion of paying it forward, because you need to put back, I believe you need to put back from that which you have benefited. And I think it's also said as to whom much is given, much is expected. So I think it's been said different ways over the years. It's certainly not my stamp on it. It's just a good attitude to have, and I like to abide by it.
Oh, I think it's a great attitude. I'm looking at the clock on the radio station, and we're running a little short on time, but I do have one last question, and you can dodge it if you want. Would you care to tell us some of the projects you're working on right now?
I've got multiple projects going on. I'm working on a resort for a Mexican coastal town down in Baja. I've got several residential projects that I'm working on, and one in particular that I wish I could say more about, but there's a privacy clause going on, is for a yacht. And it is enormous, and it's they're trying to keep a lid on it and not have a lot of notoriety. So it's something that's really interesting, because from a nautical standpoint, there are a tremendous number of restrictions on glass on board a private ship that I'm having to use and follow, that are dictating how I'm working. So it's a very, very interesting process, and it's just the more varied the projects I work on, the more I think what happens is people get to see that everybody's general interpretation when they hear stained glass is either religious or very, very traditional and Victorian, because that's sort of the nature of what stained glass is. But as I said earlier, stained glass is just a medium. It's just an art form. So what I'm trying to do is to show people that not only can it be traditional, but it can be done in very modern ways and applications that people haven't perhaps thought of before.
Okay. You definitely caught my attention with the nautical one. And
yeah.
Obviously you can't talk about it.
I would love to, but I've got a privacy and non-disclosure things that are going on with it.
But I'm just not, quite sure how stained glass could work on a yacht. It wouldn't be a porthole.
No, naval architecture is a rapidly evolving and changing field, and boats today or ships today are like floating residences. They're not necessarily the boats of before, and today it's not uncommon to have full-height windows on yachts that look really like a home in the country. So in this particular instance, it's in part of the ship that... So basically, it's this is an art form in a way that one wouldn't anticipate. So it's being used inside of this ship as it would in someone's residence in that type of a context, so that, again, that it's like their home that's floating on the water. So, no, it's not a porthole in that traditional nautical thought that it might be.
I won't ask any more questions about the project.
I appreciate that. I don't want to find myself in deep water.
Oh, bad pun. But I do hope that you will keep me informed, and when you can talk about it, I would love to discuss it with you.
I would certainly love to discuss it with you as well.
our time is up. Do you have any parting comments that you would like to make?
I think that as the topic that you basically were bringing up today about public art, I think it's really, really important that the arts continue to be supported, because what they do is they reflect so much of society. I mean, if you look back as far as we can historically, the archaeological things that we see and the finds that we make, whether it goes back as far as cave paintings from, early man to Pompeii and what's left there, the art that is left behind is a great measure of the society that it was created for. So I think that the support of the arts and public art continuing to be able to allow artists to express their work and their time as well as the public, I think, is a really important thing, and there's so many cutbacks in government now. I hope that public art remains fully funded and continues to bring forth some of the great stuff it has over the years.
You mentioned the government and cutbacks. I refuse to get drawn into a political debate, but I have a suspicion that public art probably is on the cutting block, along with teaching art in schools, art in general.
Unfortunately, I think everything is on the cutting block, and that's just the time that we live in. So hopefully this will continue, because I think it benefits everybody.
Mark, I really, really want to thank you for taking time to talk to us today. And
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yep, and I'm sure I speak for everyone here at Blog Talk Radio and bloggernews.net in wishing you a wonderful, wonderful career. And let's keep in touch.
Yes, Simon, thank you very much for your time. And I think that what you're doing is a really valuable commodity in the realm of the blog sphere, as I think it's referred to.
Yeah, I hate it. Right? But, you can call it whatever you want to call it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Until next time, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe week. We'll be back again soon. Till next time, goodbye.